Ms. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Roxanne Mendez-Johnson, and I represent Mr. Gabriel Mendoza. Your Honors, this case regards the due process right of a non-English-speaking defendant to participate in both the development and management of his trial. In this case, Mr. Mendoza's due process right to meaningfully participate in his own trial, as well as his right to have effective assistance of counsel, were both violated, both pretrial and during his trial. Pretrial, Mr. Mendoza asked his attorney, Mr. Leno, countless, numerous times, which are all documented on the record, for all of his discovery to be translated. The discovery was voluminous, over 3,500 pages, a constant stream of discovery is how it was described. But Mr. Mendoza...
Why does the government describe Mendoza as a petitioner? You have him described as the defendant. Puzzling.
I don't know.
The government's brief says Mendoza, petitioner, appellant versus United States.
My client, Mr. Mendoza, is the petitioner in this case as well. Yes, Your Honor. Under 2255.
Call him the defendant.
I apologize, Your Honor. I usually refer to him as my client.
Okay, I was just confused.
So then on this pretrial discovery, the big problem you have is that you can't really show he's prejudiced. If all the documents were translated and every piece of evidence was read to him, how would that change the outcome of the trial? What information is in there that...
The information particularly he was looking for or would have directly benefited him were information regarding the key witnesses that the government used against him. For example, there's a confidential informant, Mr. Fidel Sanchez, as well as his common-law wife. Defense attorney, Mr. Leno, gone through and did what my client requested, which was review the raw documentation, the raw evidence against him with his client, then they would have been able to negotiate and figure out different ways that Mr. Mendoza could participate. He could make commentary. He could say, this is wrong, this is right, he could be involved in that discussion, a discussion he very much wanted to be involved with, and voiced his concerns regarding months in advance, 7 months in advance. He described to the court that he was not getting along with his attorney, he was not being prepared adequately, and that he desperately wanted the assistance of an interpreter so that he could understand all the evidence he was facing.
But my understanding is that the defense attorney got all the discovery. He met with Mendoza several times, spending about 6 hours with an interpreter, providing summaries of the discovery evidence. And certainly from your review of the evidence, looking at it in English, I'm trying to figure out how he was really prejudiced. I mean, what was he expecting to find? There's been no indication of how this would have changed the outcome of the trial, which is something you have to
certainly
meet.
What he was looking for, particularly, was information about his
common
law wife.
And so what is it in those records, in the 3,500 pages, that would have been helpful to him?
What would have been helpful to him would have been documents, including 302s, interviews regarding his common law wife.
But what would they have said that would have been helpful? What is in them now that was not translated into Spanish that would have been helpful?
Any documentation regarding the interaction between the agents, the arresting and investigating agents, and his common-law wife would have been essential to place before the jury regarding any issues of coercion.
Weren't those statements of those 302s were in the discovery, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So if there was something helpful in them, you're saying that the lawyer looking at them in English couldn't tell if there was helpful information, even though he had the 302 on the person.
What I'm saying is that Mr. Mendoza specifically had one issue that he desperately wanted to discuss with his attorney regarding the coercion.
And he didn't tell his attorney what that issue was? So his attorney could then be looking at the documents for that purpose?
I don't know exactly what took place during those conversations or not. I just know that Mr. Mendoza would have benefited from having these documents as he requested.
And there's nothing that Mr. Mendoza has indicated that the concern that he had with his wife, that she was lying or that she wasn't there on a particular day or whatever it is. He hasn't pointed to any factual problem.
What he has pointed to, Your Honor, was that what he shared with me was that his wife had told him that she was coerced by the government, that she was threatened that if she did not participate in the investigation that her children would be taken from her. And I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Grimmer?
Thank you, Your Honor. William Grimmer on behalf of the United States. I would point out to the court that at the evidentiary hearing, Judge Miller did hear from Mr. Mendoza, and following up, he indicated that, of course, he doesn't speak English, and he also reads very little Spanish. I believe that's on page 182. So the question of whether or not, even if the documents were translated into Spanish, I'm not sure how much or how helpful that might have been to Mr. Mendoza. And clearly, the performance of Mr. Leno with respect to the discovery process, at least Judge Miller heard directly from Mr. Leno, who indicated he spent 21 hours reviewing the discovery, 6 hours going over it with an interpreter, summarizing it, talking about strategy, and I believe Susana Bueno, who was the interpreter, corroborated that as well, indicating that they did go over discovery and over strategy. So I think in terms of there is no constitutional right with respect to the translation of English documents into Spanish, and I believe this court held that way back, I believe about 1985, but the reality of it is it's a discretionary matter with the court, and in this particular instance, it wasn't done, but the performance of counsel, as testified to at the evidentiary hearing, clearly satisfied Judge Miller that, in fact, Mark Leno performed effectively.
And didn't Mr. Leno arrange for Mendoza to view all the physical evidence against him? And Mendoza actually had an opportunity to listen to several of the tapes that were going to be used against him at trial?
That's correct, Your Honor. This perhaps was a little bit different in terms of the normal discovery process in that Mr. Leno testified on July 27th. He met with the U.S. Attorney's Office, reviewed all the physical evidence, went back on July 21st of 2009, spent 1.8 hours with his client discussing that. Then they saw a physical viewing of the evidence on August 4th, 2009, in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And Judge Miller thought that what was significant in that particular instance was that the attorney told his client not to speak in front of the agent who was there because there were controlled substances, and said, in fact, had he encouraged Mr. Mendoza to speak in front of the agents, that might have very well been an effective assistance of counsel. So in that particular instance, he didn't feel that Mr. Leno had sort of fallen down on the job. Real quickly,
does Leno speak Spanish?
No, he does not, Your Honor. And he indicated at the hearing he had represented approximately 10 Spanish-speaking clients.
So he had, but he always had an interpreter present when he was with.
Yes, and I believe that petitioner introduced Mr. Leno's work records, billing records, and which as well as the interpreter. So there was documentation in front of Judge Miller that supported Mr. Leno. I would simply
Didn't
indicate.
Did Judge Miller make a finding that at the 2255 hearing, the defendant would when he was being questioned in English, would sometimes start to give answers before the Spanish interpretation was made?
He did. I was at the evidentiary hearing, and
Judge Miller's implying that Mr. Mendoza actually understands English to some extent?
Very little, but to some extent. I mean, obviously, this court is aware that Judge Miller called Mr. Mendoza in the written opinion, said that he was a painfully incredible, probably the least credible witness he has seen in his 30 years on the bench, and is, in terms of calling the claims poppycock, he used some other phrases that I don't usually see Judge Miller write hogwash and balderdash as to some of the claims. I think that's important because when you talk about the due process argument, one of the criterion is that it be a credible claim of incapacity to understand due to language. And I think that based upon Judge Miller's opportunity to observe Mr. Mendoza at the hearing, he found him not to be credible. I see that my time is up. If you have any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Blumer. Ms. Johnson, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honors. To respond, yes, my client does speak, or at least understand a little bit of English, but he has no formal education whatsoever, and he cannot write even in Spanish. I, as the receiving attorney for letters from him, it's unreadable. It's a string of letters, phonetically
but
speaking.
His common law wife was being questioned in Spanish, correct?
That is correct,
and
Your Honor.
And she would answer in Spanish.
That is correct, Your Honor. But
he doesn't deny being in the room while that was happening.
Oh, no. There's no issue regarding his ability to understand his wife when she was testifying as the government's witness. The issue is that at that moment, the interpreter that was at his side was removed to placed and interpret for the witness, leaving Mr. Mendoza without the ability to communicate with his attorney through an interpreter. That issue, coupled with the fact
but
that
there's
there
was a second interpreter, and doesn't Judge Miller find that second interpreter remained in the room during the testimony of Baruta?
There was a finding that there was a second interpreter in the room, but when the interpreter herself was questioned as to whether or not she was interpreting between the attorney at that time, she did not recall. She and no one involved in the appearance in the hearing could recall where the second interpreter was with particularity, and so it is our position that that finding was erroneous.
But wasn't it once her testimony was completed, Mendoza could have communicated with Lino before or during the lunch break, because when the court resumed, the court asked the defense if they had anything to raise before the jury was brought in, and Mendoza's attorney said no. The interpreter was there. So if Mendoza had some concerns about what she had said on the stand, he could have conveyed that to his lawyer, and his lawyer could have asked the question.
Had he understood that he had the ability, the right, to do that at that time, he could have done so. My client does not have a responsibility of being an effective client to Mr. Lenio. However, Mr. Lenio has the...
So you're saying that even if he heard something wrong on the stand and was so appalled by what the wife said, that your client wouldn't have known to convey that to his lawyer?
He would not have known based on his... He's never
during
been...
the break?
He has no prior, that's correct, Your Honor, he has no prior trial experience. He has not been in a courtroom in the United States, and when the moment was gone, the moment was gone.
But there was an interpreter present with him and the lawyer at other times during the trial, including before this incident. So he was accustomed to having an interpreter beside him.
That's correct.
If the interpreter vanishes, doesn't he say something to the lawyer?
Your Honor, there's testimony from the evidentiary hearing that Mr. Mendoza was indicating, was trying to get his attorney's attention, but there was no interpreter there next to him to get the attention of his attorney, as she was physically far away. So he had absolutely no ability to communicate with his own counsel during the government's second
what,
witness
his lawyer was
him.
Far away from him?
His lawyer, I believe, was placed at the podium when he was at a counsel table, or physically apart. That and Mr. Mendoza was limited by a headset, so he had to be in a particular area to catch the direct line of sight or sound for the headsets to actually function. So he was tethered to his spot.
But when the wife was testifying on direct examination, the lawyer was seated next to his client, right, with the interpreter. So you're only talking about when there was cross-examination.
No, ma'am. Before Ms. Vedueta took the stand, there was Mr. Mendoza, the interpreter, and his attorney at a long table. The interpreter was moved physically, and Mr. Mendoza was stuck at the end of the table and had no ability to communicate with his attorney. He was there, and he was indicating, it's on the record and the transcript of the evidentiary hearing, that he was trying to get his attorney's attention, but had to remain where he was in order to hear what was being translated for him. And he did not have anyone at his side that he could grab or speak with in any way. So during the entire direct examination of his common law wife, the government's second witness, who went on for 47 pages, he had no ability to communicate with his counsel and was silenced at his own trial.
So I just so during the direct examination of the wife, the government puts the wife on, and his lawyer was at the podium while the wife was on direct?
I think she was near the podium is how the, I think Mr. Mendoza stated he was at the podium, but I believe he was, knowing the courtroom and the structure, I think he was near the podium.
Yeah, because I mean, right. I wonder where the prosecutor was.
I was not present at that.
No, I mean, I just couldn't. I just didn't understand this with direct
examination. What was his lawyer be doing standing up while the opposing counsel is examining a witness? I never heard of that.
I cannot speak to it, Your Honor, as I was not present. But the
testimony. Well, I don't believe it.
The testimony from the hearing state, and I believe actually Mr. Lenu himself testified that he was seated at counsel table, but to the right side.
Yes, that I understand, not standing.
Right, that's my point, that his counsel was sitting there while he was on direct. The interpreter was there. Any concerns he had on direct that came up, he could certainly, the interpreter was right there. So it was the
But there was no interpreter, excuse me, Your Honor, but that is our point, that there was no interpreter
there
at that moment.
So he tugs his lawyer by the arm and, you know, and says, want to say something, so the lawyer would summon that second interpreter. Mm-hmm.
Except, Your Honor, my client was again tethered on the spot. There was much
testimony. Tethered on the spot. He's sitting next to his lawyer. If
yes,
he
Your
wants
Honor.
To communicate with his lawyer, you know, he tugs on him, and the lawyer understands, since he doesn't know Spanish, that he has to get the other interpreter so he can learn what his client wants to tell him.
And the testimony at the evidentiary hearing goes on for much of the hearing, stating that Mr. Mendoza very much wanted to hear what was going on, but in order to hear what was going on, he kind of had to find the sweet spot.
I don't understand you. He's sitting next to his lawyer.
Your Honor.
And his common law wife is speaking in
right.
Spanish and
That's
being
correct.
Questioned in Spanish. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why he's got the headsets on.
That, Your Honors, that's what the testimony reflected. I can't answer.
Well, headset on or headset off, if he wants to talk to his lawyer, he just, you know, grabs him or something or touches him or signals to him, and he's sitting right next to him.
And, Your Honor,
the lawyer knows needs an interpreter.
And, Your Honor, the testimony reflects that he did indicate on the record with
what
his
hand gesture.
What
does this indicate? He's sitting right next to the lawyer.
This
Are you
is
saying
what the
lawyer
reflects.
Just ignores him?
That he, the attorney was focused on the questioning.
What are you
at
focused? If his client sitting next to him touches him, he's going to turn, isn't he?
If that were to occur, if that were myself, I would turn, Your Honor. But I also speak English and Spanish, so I could directly communicate with my counsel, with my client. Mr. Mendoza had no ability to directly communicate his concerns as they were happening to be able to address the issues at the same time.
No, the question is whether he could signal the lawyer that he wanted to say something to the lawyer, and then the lawyer would get the interpreter. Now, is your proposition that Mendoza is trying to get the lawyer's attention, lawyer's sitting next to him, and the lawyer just doesn't do anything? Is that your proposition? That's the ineffective assistance. He doesn't go and get the second interpreter.
Well, that's the issue regarding ineffective assistance, Your Honor, is that Mr. Lenu does not object when the interpreter is moved to interpret for the witness.
Look, that's irrelevant. The point is, the question is, if Mendoza wanted to talk to his lawyer, he had to, you know, tap him on the arm or something like that and say, and then the lawyer would understand that his client's trying to communicate with him, and the lawyer would get the second interpreter who's somewhere in the courtroom. So what's the problem? I don't get it.
The problem is he was not able to communicate with his attorney.
No, that's not, doesn't make any sense. What does he do the rest of the time when he's with his lawyer and he wants to speak?
The rest of the time, Your Honors, there was an interpreter physically present.
Yes, so if the interpreter is somewhere else in the room, he pats the lawyer on the arm and points to the interpreter. Right?
Your Honor, I was not present during the actual trial. All I can
Well, was nobody present?
No one present at the trial, Your Honor.
I'm being sarcastic. There's nobody else who could testify as to what was going on?
Your Honor, there was much testimony at the evidentiary hearing, but no one knew exactly what was going on. Everyone's recollections were different. So,
and at the evidentiary hearing, Mendoza never said what quarrel he had with what his wife said, right?
I disagree, Your Honor. At the evidentiary hearing, I directly asked Mr. Mendoza, what issues did you want to speak with concerning with your attorney? And he said, I wanted my attorney to ask Ms. Virueta, had she been threatened by the agents, had she not cooperated with them in this investigation?
And that's a pretty, pretty big point. And so my point is that when the break came, if it was that serious, you know, that he's believing that his wife was coerced, she was forced and everything, that your position is he couldn't tell his lawyer that, as big a point as that is?
My position is, Your Honor, my client...
Because the interpreter was there then, because when the break came,
yes,
the interpreter's right there. So that's a burning issue, if that's something, you know, that's a real concern. And he didn't know how to say that.
The moment was lost, Your Honor. The witness had left the room. He did not know that he could recall her back. He did not know
that she was not a surprise witness to him, was she?
I don't believe so.
He knew all along she was going to be one of their key witnesses.
But the issue, you know, he was not getting along with his attorney, and for all he knew, his attorney, he trusted his attorney to deal with these issues, and had he, you know, Mr. Leno dealt with this issue, it would have been covered. However, when he saw that it wasn't covered and now the witness is gone, his moment
was
lost.
Well, had he told the lawyer that she had been threatened?
I believe he was waiting for... No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because they never went through the raw documentation, including any of the interviews of his wife. Had, and that was one of my other points.
Nothing in the interviews, nothing in the 302s hinted that she had been threatened.
No, this was something that my client believed to have happened, I believe, based on a conversation with her in the past at some
but
point.
But that wasn't in the 302.
Correct. That was not in the 302s.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
And we thank you for your efforts on behalf of
your
client. We thank Mr. Grimmer for his efforts on behalf of his client.